I've got some exciting news. Today is Stewardship Sunday. Yes, it's exciting. And I am privileged to be up here on this platform today. You see, at our church, we only talk about money once a year. So this is the time to say thank you. Thank you all for all your generosity during this past year. Thank you for your commitment to this community and for those of you who have given so generously to our financial resources. It's important, it's necessary, and it is appreciated. You know, being a generous person is one of life's greatest privileges. You probably know that Jesus talked about money more than any other subject in the Bible, absolutely any other subject. We know, for instance, that it's harder for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get into heaven. If you really think about that, it says some pretty amazing things about rich people. It alludes to the fact that rich people become so attached to their assets that they lose faith in their core values. They lose sight of them. They move from their view and don't ever think for one moment that we are not the rich people. For we are the very rich and privileged. Supporting this view that Jesus was talking about, did you know that from 1968 to 1997, actual giving in churches increased, but actual percent of giving decreased? In fact, by 1997, in terms of per capita giving, we were giving less in 1997, the most prosperous decade of a long time, than we were during the Depression. Now, perhaps it's not that we were getting stingier, but you know, there's so many more things in the world to buy nowadays, right? I mean, between 1933 and 1997, our houses got bigger. We needed a car, and then we needed two cars. We had larger rooms. We had more gadgets. Technology's been just wonderful to supply us with all of these things that we definitely need, right? Yeah. It's hard to differentiate need from desire. But you know, we're not any different from the Puritans and the Pilgrims from the 17th and 18th centuries. And I thought I'd just throw in a little bit of history for us. When the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock in 1620, they immediately built a fort for protection, but also for a place to go on the Lord's Day. And folks went in threes to the fort every Lord's Day for a service until 1648, when they built their own meeting house. We didn't call them churches, they called them meeting houses. By 1675, though, a law had been passed, and that law says every town must have a meeting house or a church. And you know what? If you didn't build one right away, the magistrates were authorized to build it for you and then charge it back to you. And since everyone had to be a member of a church, that meant you were paying for a church whether you built it or not. And the first churches were really crude, you know, just these little box-like structures or with fortifications and room to store things. And the church had to be built within a half a mile of the community. So they were all in the valley. And if you moved into the community, you had to build your house within a half a mile of the church. Well, just imagine that in Evansville. Okay. And that's what happened too. Okay. Is that more people came in and they couldn't all build their houses within a half a mile of the church. So they decided to move the church. Now, where should we move the church? To the highest ground. Now, moving a church to the highest ground had some important reasoning. behind it. Because, for example, you wanted protection. And up from the highest point, you could see all over the valley below. However, moving the church to the highest point was also a really good thing if you wanted people to notice it. And more, our Puritan ancestors wanted people to notice the church. So instead of being a little square, it got bigger, it got more ornate, we lost sight of what we needed and what we wanted. And then, you know what happened? Paint became cheap. So the churches would make their members pay, they would have levies, they would ask for gifts, they would take votes on painting the church. And the churches were yellow, red, orange, really bright colors so that everyone could see them. And they were finished in chocolate or white, so you could see them for miles. That's the outside of the church. Now, inside the building, we used to have these long, hard benches without any backs, right? As we got more money, we wanted more comfort. And what did we do? First of all, we charged people. We sold pew spots. So, for example, now we know the Granholms like to sit up here in the front row, okay? So we could charge them a handsome fee for that plum spot. On the other hand, let's see. We know Miss Molly likes to sit in the back. Okay? Now, if we were really smart, we'd reverse it and say, well, you want to sit in the back, therefore we're going to charge you the plum fee for sitting exactly where you wanted to sit. And that's what they did at first. They sold the spots so that you could sit near your friends or where you wanted to be. Now, this did differ from church to church, but the general plan was the same. See how much money you can get out of where people sit. So you've heard about selling the pews, okay? Afterwards, it developed into selling the pews. Now, the pew was not a plank, okay? The pews became like boxes with very high partitions around them and ornate designs around them and benches inside them and little fold-out benches to put your little Bible on or your hat on, okay? And you paid big bucks for these things. Now, actually, they were pretty good because the sermons were like 3 to 5 hours long. So if you had a nice high partition around you, nobody could see when you fell asleep. Of course, if you weren't rich enough to have one of those partitions, did you ever wonder why the women wore those hats? Okay, the hats were meant to shade the eyes so that you couldn't see whether the eyes were open or closed. Things you learn. So we would sell pews. Now, once we sold all the pews to the richer people that we could, we then had seating arrangements. And you think our committees are difficult? Let me tell you, they fought over seating arrangements, okay? Because the closer to up front you were meant the more status you had or the more money you gave to the church. So people would increase their giving so that they could sit closer to the front of the church. So folks, if you want to increase your giving, we'll let you sit up front. So just remember that. However, it wasn't just dialogue, okay? They actually had fist fights. They levied fines. So they made even more money by doing that, by levying fines, because people would sneak in and move up forward a row and hope nobody would notice, okay? And if that worked, the next week they'd come and they'd sneak in and they'd move up another row. It was really, really big deal. So even in the 17th and 18th centuries, we can see the adverse effects of accumulating wealth and forgetting the difference between our desires and our needs. The riches became an end in themselves. Instead, we might want to remember the truer definition of rich. Rich is not what you have, but what you give away. What can you part with to make the world a better place? And I'd like to talk to you just for a moment about the difference. There's a difference that I just learned about, you know, how something's very obvious until you think about it. The difference between a pledge and a donation. Have you ever thought about that before? The difference between a pledge and a donation? A donation is when you give a gift. You give a present. Here, take this, it's yours. Pledge, on the other hand, is a solemn agreement to fulfill a promise or a debt. It is a commitment to something. And we all know that when we join something that we like, we might start out by just giving a little bit, and then the next year it becomes more important to us, and we give a little bit more, and we give a little bit more. And finally, you know, I mean, it turns out that we're really looking at our lives in terms of this important commitment. A pledge drive asks you to commit. Now, there's a story of a pledge drive in Kenya, and Kenya is not a rich country. And this happened to be a very poor community. Now, the drive is much anticipated, and it's heralded. There's a bunch of drummers up front and a great big plate that sits on a stand, and everybody comes forward and they dance or shake or come over and they put their offering in the plate. And this lady comes, and she comes up there. She goes over to the plate and she takes the plate off the stand and puts it on the ground. And then she steps in it, and she dances. She is offering her whole self to that community, 100% of her. Now, I ask you to consider the pledge that you're going to make this year. How much of yourself are you going to give in that pledge? Is it going to be an arm or a leg or maybe just a toe or maybe your whole self? The church is an important part of our lives. As they did in Kenya, we want to treat it with respect and honor, not just another bill to be paid. Lyle Schaller, who is a church guru, he says that healthy churches have three things in common. They have a future orientation, they have leaders who are willing to take risks, and they have a strong focus on mission. Is UUCE a healthy church? What do you think? Well, we have a very clear mission. We have an emerging vision. We spent this last year, we won a grant, and now we are having consultants come in. Are they helping us look at today? No. They are helping us plan for the future. We are active in many interfaith activities geared to improving the circumstances for everyone in Evansville. Our religious exploration for both adults and children is changing and growing as the years play out. Risk-taking. When I came to this congregation almost 2 years ago, and I was pre-candidating, I looked at your balance sheet and said, hey guys, y'all can't afford me. And I was told, and it was later confirmed, we know that, but we are taking a leap of faith. We want professional ministry. And we know that we are going to borrow from our endowment fund in order to get professional ministry. And we know this is risky. This is gutsy. But we also know what this church needs. And so we've done that for 2 years. We don't want to keep doing that, though, do we? Now, I also took a risk in coming to this church. because I knew you didn't have enough money, and I knew we had some hard work to do together. But I am here to tell you today, I think we are making headway. We are working together as a really wonderful group. I feel good about this pledge drive this year. I've never seen a more well-organized campaign. You know, Malika is just wonderful with that sort of thing. And in the next week, if it hasn't already happened, one of our 8 visiting stewards is going to come visit you. I ask you, they're going to ask you about what's good with the church, what would you like to see changed, what's your level of satisfaction, what can you give to the church. Be kind to them and be open. Open yourself to them. I could go on talking about the mission work that we do here. You're all aware of it, but I want to tell you a couple of things. Did you look at, and I'm sure you did, the boxes out there that have shoes in them? I brought one box in. The next week I had to bring another box in. Now the 2 big boxes are overflowing, and this is a 3-week campaign. It is absolutely wonderful, the generosity that we have shown. Souls for souls. We have a large amount of shoes to contribute to this community-wide effort. This community always looks to help when they can. You know, when we first started serving at the United Caring Shelter, they said we couldn't do it. They said we'd never be able to sustain it over time. Thanks to really great leadership, and thanks to the generosity of all of you, that sauce and that spaghetti and that money for salads keeps coming in. I'll mention very briefly that we're looking at a signature project. I know I've mentioned it before, but it's kind of a teaser, okay? Because we're not going to talk to you about it until next month. Something that UUCE can do year after year to be known in the community. It's coming, folks. We're almost ready to talk about it. Those are the things that match Lyle Schaller's criteria for a healthy church. Yes, we have an outward focus. Yes, we take risks. Yes, we have a lot of focus on mission work. Not different from that, but a little bit different in emphasis. I want to tell you about a couple of other things. One is the minister's discretionary fund. This is a fund that you all give to on Christmas Eve, and sometimes we have an additional collection for that. I want you to know how it's been used. This past year, we've given money for people who have to have doctor's appointments, gas, job interviews, gas for a job interview, tokens to prisoners who have been released and don't have any way to get around, so bus tokens for them. Supplemental food money to diabetics who can't get fresh foods from the pantries. Emergency housing for a night. Help with utilities. A meal for a family with children. A copay for medication. We also want to tell you about our telephone outreach. Support for persons who have been hurt by others, particularly other churches. I get calls every single week from folks that are in despair, anger, distrust. Many of them are GLBT folks. Many of them are young men who have been kicked out of their church of origin. Sometimes tears, sometimes anger, but always a need to hear that they are loved and are welcome here at UUCE. A second type of outreach that I'm often asked to do is for marriages. Now, I do marriages outside of our community privately, but the calls that I get. I had a call just the other day from somebody who was really hostile. Okay, she's asking about marriage, and she's kind of yelling at me, you know, well, do you think you can do it? I'm going, well, yes, we do this kind of ceremony all the time. And she broke down and said, I'm so sorry. She says, but the last minister just told me I'm going to hell because I'm a Wiccan. And it's like I called every church, and nobody will perform a ceremony between a Wiccan and a Christian. It's not even so much that I get to do the service, but that I get to say, you are welcome here. You are okay, a good person. You are loved. So I tell you this because it's important for you to see the connection between your pledge dollars and what actually happens at UUCE, because our budget looks like we're navel-gazing, right? I mean, you know, it's to pay the utilities and to pay the minister and not much else, because that's where we are financially. But that's not where our heads and our hearts are, and we live out our mission. So, before I wrap up, gotta tell a joke. We haven't had a joke yet. A well-worn dollar bill and a well-worn $20 bill are brought to the Federal Reserve to be turned in. They're moving along the conveyor belt, and the $20 bill says to the $1 bill, I've had such a great life. I've been so many places. I've been to the Caribbean. I've been to Las Vegas. I have been everywhere in the world. It's just been a fine run. How about you? The dollar bill says, wow, that's really cool. I've been lots of places too. I've been to the Methodist Church. I've been to the Lutheran Church. I've been to the Baptist Church. The $20 bill interrupts and says, what's a church? This year, we are making a very special effort to encourage everyone to be a fair share pledger. So when the steward visits you, one of the things that they're going to show you is that chart that you got today in the mail, so in your packet. So kind of look at that. And it tells you how you can be a fair share giver. Now, first of all, I want to say I'm not discouraging you. If you're used to tithing 10%, wonderful, and we appreciate it. And let's not laugh, because we want more tithers, right? But in this day and age, not everybody does give 10%, and the UUA asks that we give at least 2% of our adjusted gross income. That would be a fair share to your church. For example, you know that, every one of you knows that I make $44,000 a year. My fair share this year, my pledge, is $1,320. That's 3% of my income, and that is considered a fair share. It may be that you can't make a fair share pledge this year, but we ask that you make a pledge. Put your money where your heart and your reason and your faith are. One latte is more money than a donation, a pledge of $104 a year, which is $2 a week. So the next time you go out to dinner and just say, oh, I think I'll just have water today. Once a week, that's all you have to do to make a pledge of $104 a year, and that $104 a year adds up. Now, that's a minimum pledge, but that is a necessary pledge for our church and for your faith to remind yourselves of what you're committing to, of what it is you believe in and want to be a part of. I ask you to move beyond your comfort level. I ask you to nourish the church and your faith commitment. We live in a materialistic society, but we can look through that to our core values. Now I'm going to close with a biblical reference, and please listen carefully to this one because I want to make sure you understand it. Shortly after the death and resurrection of Jesus, people started to form communities. They were excited. They were in awe. They were in anticipation. What was this new belief system going to be like? And so they would sell their homes and come to the community and go to Peter and give their money at the feet of Peter. Say, I've sold my property. This is what I got for it. I want to join the community. Well, there was this couple, Ananias and Sapphira, and they said, hey, look, you know, we're cautious people. Let's keep some out for a rainy day. So they sold their property, they went to Peter, they laid a sum of money in front of Peter's feet and said, here is the money for the sale of our property. And Peter said, and thank you, and this is what you got for the sale of your property. And they said, and Ananias, who had come alone, said, oh yes, this is what I got for the sale of property. And Peter said, why are you lying to me? This is not what you got for the sale of your property. And Ananias fell and dropped dead. A short time later, not knowing what had happened, Sapphira came up to the group, and Peter said to Sapphira, Sapphira, you sold your property. Is this the amount of money you got for your property? And Sapphira, supporting the decision that she and her husband had made, said, yes, this is what we got. And Peter said, you have lied to us. And she fell down dead. Folks, the moral of this story, what I want you to hear, don't lie. When the steward asks you if this is a fair share donation, and it is, say yes and be happy. And if it's not, say no, for it's something for you to work on. Let us all be guided by our heart, our reasoning, and our love of this community, and give this year as generously as we can. May it be so.